Welcome to The Contemplative Life. Three pastors, friends, and spiritual companions help us explore spirituality through a contemplative lens.
I'm Christina Roberts.
I'm Chris Roberts.
I'm Christina Kaiser. We're glad you joined us.
Well, hello. It is great to be with you. Today, we are grateful to introduce our guest, Jim Powell, to the podcast. Jim is a psychotherapist with an interest at the intersection of spirituality and psychology. We recently met Jim and heard him talk about an aspect of his practice called sound healing. And this was a new term for me, but as I heard him, I found it to be a fascinating topic that we wanted to share with our listeners. So Jim, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So how would you define or explain sound healing?
Well, there's so many aspects to sound healing. I won't be able to cover it all, but I would just say that the way I think of it is healing comes from the word wholeness. So that sound healing is using sound in its various forms to bring us back to wholeness, whether that's kind of a balance and whether that's psychologically, emotionally, spiritually, or even physically. And of course, in my work, I use it a lot for psychological and spiritual healing, if you will. But certainly there are many situations where people reported some physical healing. And there's talk of that out in people who are working with it. That hasn't been the major focus, but I've seen it happen, you know, kind of as an aside to people working on it in the way that we do.
Jim, I remember talking to you and you were sharing a story about a Benedictine monastery and how this first kind of came into your frame. I wonder if you could share that story with us.
Yes. Interest in sound and chanting and so on have been part of my spiritual path. And so I went to a training seminar with a person, I think it was Don Campbell, who's one of the sound healers who's been around a bit. And he shared this story about in France, back probably in the 60s, there was a Benedictine monastery that he was talking about. And having been raised and brought up in a Catholic school, I remember the time when there was a change from I think it was the Second Vatican Council, and they made a lot of changes to modernize practice in the Catholic Church. And one of them that I remember distinctly was taking the Latin out of the Mass. And so to try to make it more relevant to people with their own language, which obviously has a lot of important value. And so in this monastery, that's kind of setting the tone. I believe there were like roughly about 90 monks in the monastery. And according to the story, a good number of them, some around 70 or so, were experiencing a lot of fatigue, you know, chronic fatigue, and as well as depression. And so they brought in various experts to try to figure out what was going on, because they changed their lifestyle based upon this modernization. And one of the things that, you know, that was tried was that one expert thought, well, they're actually not very well nourished because they're eating mostly a vegetarian diet. And so they put them back on meat and potatoes and so on, and found out that that didn't exactly change the circumstance for them. They tried all these other things. So they brought in this expert, this Dr. Tomatis is his name, and who's got a lot of background in various aspects of medicine and research. And he looked at the situation, and one of the main things of his suggestion was that because of their lifestyle changes, they cut out the Gregorian chant, which is part of, as my understanding, is part of the rhythms of the day. I think maybe like 8 different times in the day, there would be a lot of chanting. The Gregorian chant would be over 6 hours a day of this kind of into even parts of the night and so on in that rhythm. And so he recommended that they put that chant back into their lifestyle. And lo and behold, they did. And after about 6 months, most of them recovered from their fatigue and depression. And so it kind of struck me. And his theory was that the brain needs to be charged by certain frequencies of sounds. And so he talked about that there's certain discharge sounds and then that there's charge sounds. And so in the discharge sounds, that's what drains us. So right before coming on with you, I heard a leaf blower in the background. I was thinking, uh-oh, I hope that doesn't mess up this thing. Now with my headphones in, I don't know if it's still going on or not. But anyways, it was just kind of interesting because I just read an article recently about leaf blowers that besides their pollutant effect, the gas leaf blowers, 1 hour of operation would be equivalent to driving a modern car to Denver from here in terms of the amount of pollution damage to the environment. And so in Washington, D.C., there was this article was particularly talking about, but they're putting a ban on gas leaf blowers. One, because the sounds are so damaging and the people who have to operate them, often of people who migrated here and don't even speak the English language, it's like the negative effects of that damaging sound. So from a sound point of view, if that's something that those kinds of frequencies are damaging to us. Where other frequencies in the right range actually charges the brain. And so if we get the right frequencies, which is a lot of the, you know, all the different chant traditions has that. And of course, the Gregorian chant in this particular case was one of those. And especially when it's done in the environments that they're done in, such as in, you know, with the great acoustics, then that has a quite a healing effect. So there's many, many different ways that happens. I think of one of the sound healers that we did a training with. Her name is Jill Purse. She's from the UK. And she talked a lot about before there was television and radio, there's a few more things now, that people used to sit around or be in communities and they would sing together a lot of times. And from her point of view, and I don't know how accurate this is, but that there was less depression. Because people were singing and getting charged through these different methods, as well as having the sense of connection and community, which, you know, from my point of view, is that loss of connection has increased the problems with mental health in this day and age. So.
This is also fascinating to me. I think Christina had mentioned to you that I sang professionally for a while. And I don't tell people that anymore, so it's really not great that I'm putting it on the podcast like this. But, you know, everyone always wants you to sing if you say that. But I certainly have noticed, not so much from, like, the science. I don't know anything about the science, but there is something about the way that the face vibrates, mm-hmm. and it tends to lower my sense of anxiety. Mm-hmm. So when I wanted to pass that on to others, like I often take the singing out of it. Like chant is actually a really easy form of singing. It's often just a couple notes and this kind of mm-hmm. a thing. So we often do humming as opposed to singing. But are you doing it in your practice? Is that how you're engaging the sound healing?
Yes. So I would say the bulk of my practice on an individual one-on-one basis was not sound healing, but I would have people who would come to it wanting that. And so a lot of what we did is through workshops and retreats where we would create this prolonged, you know, an environment with prolonged time together and singing together, which I think singing community or chanting, sounding in community, I think has a lot of power, both from the amplification of the sound and from the sense of more connection. So in terms of you're talking about the I had this image of, oh, I'd love to hear you sing in an acoustically good environment. Because one of the most healing aspects of sound, in fact, one of the sound healers that we worked with said the most healing sound, you think of all the beautiful instruments we have, which are all part of healing, but the most healing sound is the human voice, and it's your voice. It doesn't matter if you have a great voice or a poor voice. And it's because of the sounds you make are attuned to you and they're vibrating in your body. In fact, you're talking about the cheeks vibrating. And one of the things when teaching people to make sounds, particularly sometimes this prolonged vowel sounds would be an example of the kinds of sounds that we would work with, that rather than how do I sound out there, it's like it's focusing on what's the vibration in the body and how do I sound inside? And that has a different effect on what happens with our brain. In fact, you know, I'm also a meditation teacher. And one of the things in meditation, working with mindfulness, is having people pay attention in the present moment to what's the sensation in the body. And it's interesting how that studies show that impacts different aspects of the brain. And so the point you're bringing up is something that in this work, see the parallels of doing this.
Well, I find what you're saying very fascinating, Jim, particularly the aspect where our own voice can bring healing to us because it's attuned to us, and the need for us to actually give voice to the various things that are happening in our life. But I'm also struck by, I've read different passages and there's images in literature that talk about where people might not be at a place to even use their own voice. And so someone, you know, like the famous passage from the Bible is where this person, his name is Saul, was a king, and he had someone come and play the harp. It said that he was vexed in spirit. And then this sort of music or playing or singing over him would bring him to a place, or maybe even something that I think of would be to restore him to himself. And so I know there's also the other, there's all kinds, but you know, what do you think about this aspect where we can be healing agents to other people with what you're talking about in sound healing?
Yeah, well, one of the, Jonathan Goldman, one of the people we did some intensive training with, he had a, I'm not sure if it was his theory, but he had this formula that sound is a deliverer of intention. And so sound plus healing intention helps bring us to more wholeness. And so whether you're playing instrumental music or working with vocalization, the intention you have is very important. And so, for example, if you want to look at some basic sound healing, singing happy birthday to somebody, you have a positive intention and you're naming them by name and you can tell people are feeling it. I mean, singing happy birthday usually goes short, but then it's over with. But I think that the intention is very important, and that's more important than the performance. And sometimes when we work with people, is sometimes people who have trouble with singing is sometimes, and I do this sometimes in individual therapy or if we're doing therapy within a group setting, is getting people to first sound where they're blocked. It's like, where do you feel blocked inside? Where in the body is that? It could be their voice or it could just be where their emotional stuckness is, and make a sound of that dissonance. It's like, imagine that part of you could make a sound, and maybe it's a whimper, maybe it's a growl, maybe it's a whatever, you know, to be with that a little bit and just kind of, and if you can't even get a voice with it, just kind of breathe with it and maybe turn the breath into a sounding and then moving it. So there's something about aligning with, connecting with where we are and then moving to transform it and then moving it to a more harmonious sound. So maybe that dissonant sound might move to something that's more of a, and I will often, to help people with their inhibition, tone along with it. I'll try to match what, or train myself to what their vibration is and just make those sounds. I think of, that's just one example, or it could just be that in, you know, like we use chanting both sometimes of a different language, like chanting is very much part of the Sanskrit, the old Tantra yoga from thousands of years back, or we created a lot of chants that are in English, and sometimes we just do the repetition. When you have a group of people, particularly singing it, it allows people to kind of start to join in without having to feel like they're performing. And we really emphasize the intention, coming back to that point, so that people don't feel like this is a performance, or it doesn't matter how well you sing. I taught myself guitar and so on, and I'm not a trained musician that well. My wife is more trained. She used to teach music, and so we've done a lot of groups together. And in some of the groups, I've had a number of people who were classically trained and who are, you know, much more trained musically than I was. And that's sometimes afterwards, to my surprise, they would thank me for helping liberate their voice, because so much, and you probably know about this, Christina, about so much, you know, I imagine in opera this is true, but so many times people are really trained at a high level, they have so much judgment and there's comparison and am I doing it right? And they might even have a teacher who's very critical, trying to get them to be perfect. And this just kind of throws that whole thing out there. So in a paradoxical way, aligning to where you are and training to where you are is very important.
No, I can absolutely speak to that. I feel like I know so many musicians who, if they really want to get somewhere, like spiritually, it's more like taking it down to bare bones or brass tacks, like just a C chord or, mm-hmm, or like, mm-hmm. I was saying like just humming because yeah, you get so in your head. You were mentioning though, like, let's say that they're starting on a sound that represents irritation or frustration or some emotion. How does one know when to start moving towards that more harmonious sound?
Well, usually if I'm with them, if I'm guiding, for example, it's like I'll just kind of get an intuitive sense when I'll suggest moving it that way. If somebody's doing it on their own, I would just say, just stay there a few minutes, and when it feels right to you, to move it forward, but not to overdo it. But I think sometimes people have this, like, why do, it's like even some popular music, it's like where there's an expression of discontent. I come from the Beatles generation, so I'm thinking of a song, Don't Let Me Down. You know, it's like the singing, that sometimes there's this release, and maybe moving that to something more like, let it be. Let it be, you know, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. So you're shifting even the intention of it. So I sometimes, if people are going to do it on their own, I'll suggest they could even pick songs that they really like, but that has some of that expression of their feeling, but then move it to something that's more harmonious. Or it could be instrumental music too, you know, as you were talking about, Chris, about, you know, David and Saul. It's funny, it was earlier this spring, it was over in that territory in Jerusalem where that was all taking place. I was curious about that history. And so I think it's sometimes there's an intuition, but sometimes people need more specific guidance. But I want to come back to one thing that you talked about, the humming. And I think humming is really, really good. And one of the reasons humming is good, I mean, it, there's many reasons, but from this aspect, the more harmonics or overtones we have in our sound, the more healing the vibration is. And it's a way to feel it more in the body. I'm sure you probably feel it quite a bit. And so humming is really, really powerful. And so that's another way to get people who feel inhibited to, as you probably know, to get them going is through humming. So there's many different approaches.
I appreciate how accessible you're making this and just even mentioning the happy birthday, because I was thinking, when do we sing communally? And it's maybe at a baseball game in the seventh inning stretch, mm-hmm. we might sing communally or happy birthday. But most of it, like for me, it's I'm singing in the shower or in the car where no one else is with me type of a thing, because it's safe and I don't consider myself a musician. So I appreciate the accessibility of a noise, a sound actually as a starting point that I can then lean into that feels very accessible to me.
You're really right on with that. You know, it's like we have this desire to sing communally, whether it's a baseball game or when I was way back in some of my early training of helping people with psychedelics and so on, one of the people said, you know, it's like even the Elks clubs get, when they get together, they sing, you know, it's like, and that's important. And I think of an example of, and this is, so our family gets together and we, you know, once a year we do a little family vacation. And one of the things, I bring my guitar along and I sing this song that I learned from one of the sound healers, Molly Scott. And it's something like her version. It's down on the farm, we get up in the morning early, and we sing our praises to the sun and tell the sun good morning. And so they get the kids that say, what else should we tell good morning? So one will say, oh, we're by the lake, so with fish in the lake. And then we go around and sing it to each person who's there. And there's a real affirmation, and they still like that, even though, well, this last time we didn't do it every morning because now some of them are in the teenage years, and so we're not all getting up in the morning at the same time, but it still works. But that's something that's very simple. It's like you're bringing the intention, the sound, and it's that communal, and so it's a very simple thing. So there's a lot of ways that we do it. Sometimes people ask me, well, there's a discipline to working with toning, practicing overtone chanting, or even humming. You know, you got to take this discipline. And I'm thinking of somebody more recently who's very busy and it's a very stressful job. And she works with teens. She was kind of in a place of depression where she was like, oops, I'm really kind of hitting my low here. And I knew that she had like to sing. And so the simple instruction from me, and this is somebody anybody can give to anybody, is put together your playlist, because she, you know, she had a little bit of a commute, of songs you like, and just sing along, just get the singing going. And so the most, there are specific reasons why certain sounds are healing, and, you know, certain sacred songs that are definitely useful. But my simple message is the most healing sound to start with is the music, are the songs you like to sing. And so just do that for a starter.
I love that. Thank you so much for just even offering a few little practical ways that we can engage with this sound healing. I loved your example of whenever your family gets together and singing. It gets me thinking about, you know, Christine and I, we went on a trip for, I think, our fourth anniversary, and we're at the Maritime Provinces, and something that was really big is this thing called a ceilidh. A ceilidh is this event where people get together and play music and dance. And they have these, like on a weekly basis, these ceilidhs. And I personally am inspired by what you're saying, because not only can I engage in this with, you know, the little tidbits that you've given us, but I'm also looking for ways that I can look out into the community and finding ways to gather with people and sing and dance and do things that will bring happiness. If I could just get my kids away from screens.
That is the challenge. No, but you're really right. And you mentioned dancing. It's like, if you can add movement and dance to it, that's wonderful. Because sometimes, you know, in some groups that we've done, it's like, have people start to start with a movement to their dissonance, you know, make a sound to it, and eventually moving to a more harmonious flowing dance, with sometimes putting on music in the background, instrumental music or music that can be sung to, or just using their own voices. So adding the movement aspect is very powerful.
Well, thank you so much for just a wonderful conversation. It has been such a pleasure to be with you, Jim.
My pleasure to be with the three of you. So thank you.
We wanted to let you know that Jim and his wife have offered us some sound recordings, and we will put a link in the show notes where you can access that for your listening pleasure. Now is the part of the podcast where we transition to what we are into. What are we into this week?
Well, you know, the fall is here. And so there's a few things that make me so excited in the fall. One of them is smells. So I like to embrace fresh smells. It's something cozy. So my mother sells the Scentsy stuff, and I like to get the bakery ones or the cafe ones and make the house smell like graham cracker or apple or cinnamon or whatever. So that is, it's new and fresh, and it doesn't last forever, but that is what I like to do at this time of year.
Very fun. Well, going along with the fall theme, I am into soups, all different kinds of soups every year. I kind of have my standard soups that I start with, and I've been scouring the internet looking for different types of soup recipes. And I've sort of on Sunday night, what are all the leftovers that we have in the fridge? And I'll make some sort of a soup out of what it is. And actually, I'm surprised that it's turned out really fun and interesting and yummy. So I am all about soups.
Continuing with the fall theme, I am into the different colors that are just beginning to peek into the trees. And I find it fascinating how trees don't all of a sudden just turn one color. Like, there's different colors in the tree. And so I've been walking past a few trees every day, and I'm noticing the change, the subtle changes that happen over the course of a couple of days. And so that is what I am into recently. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure to be with you.
If you enjoy listening to the podcast, we invite you to stay connected by signing up for our Foundry Spiritual Center newsletter, where you can learn about even more programs and offerings. You'll find a link to subscribe in the show notes, or visit us anytime at foundrysc.com. Thanks again for being with us. We hope you have a great week.